I remember many years ago, one of my teachers in class made a statement that stuck with me for a long time. He said, "Never forget that the Old Testament is a great source of illustrations for principles that are revealed in the New Testament." I found that to be the case. Well, a great principle that we need to be reminded of on a regular basis is revealed in Romans chapter 8 and verse 28. The Apostle Paul was writing to the church in the city of Rome, and he said, "And we know that all things work together for good to them that love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose." There's a great principle revealed in that one passage of Scripture. It has to do with God's providential working in the lives of his faithful children. You know, we need to be reminded of that, I believe, on a regular basis, because as you and I both know, all things are not good. And this passage doesn't teach that all things are good. It says all things work together for good. And if we will keep this principle in mind, it will help us to go through periods when things are taking place that are not good. It helps us to stay focused. It reminds us that God is in control. And in the end, his people will be victorious, regardless of what we might have to face in this life. So that's a great principle revealed in the book of Romans. And I always like to point out for Romans 15 and verse 4, whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning. So that passage, Romans 8 and verse 28, the principle revealed in that passage is illustrated many times throughout the Bible, especially in the Old Testament. That's why we're studying the book of Esther at this particular time, because it provides us with a great illustration of God working all things together for the good of his people. Let's look at chapters 1 through 4 very briefly, and by way of review, those are the chapters that we've covered so far. In chapter 1, we find that a man named Ahasuerus was the king of Persia, and he removed Vashti from being queen. Now, there's a very important point revealed in chapter 1 that we need to keep in mind as we continue through the book. This king loved parties. He had a feast that lasted 180 days. That's a long party, isn't it? When he finished that, he had another one for 7 days. Keep that in mind. The king loved feasts, parties, banquets. All right, keep that thought in mind. Chapter 2, we find that Esther, who was a young Jewish woman that happened to be very beautiful, she was chosen to be the new queen. Now, Vashti was removed from being queen. Esther took her place. We need to remember, though, that Esther did not reveal that she was Jewish. She was instructed by Mordecai, who raised her, not to reveal that she came from the people of Israel. In chapter 3, we're introduced to a man named Haman, and he came up with a plot to destroy all of the Jews, and he manipulated the king into making that an official law. There's one thing about the laws of the Medes and the Persians that we need to keep in mind. The laws of the Medes and the Persians could not be altered. Once they were official, they were settled. And then, in chapter 4, Mordecai got Esther involved in this situation that had developed. So Esther's the queen. She has not revealed that she is Jewish. Haman has come up with a plot to destroy all of the Jewish people. Now, who would that include? It would include Esther. But no one knew that she was Jewish. That is, among the Persian people. But Mordecai, he was the one that Haman was really mad at. But Haman was going to take out his wrath on all of Mordecai's people. Well, Mordecai got Esther involved in this situation that had developed. Now, in chapter 5 that we want to cover this evening, Esther had requested a period of fasting on her behalf. After that period of fasting, she made an appearance before the king. So that's the essence of chapter 5, but we want to study it in more detail. Let's look at verses 1 through 5. These verses show us that Esther approached the king. Chapter 5 and verse 1. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's house, over against the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house over against the gate of the house. And it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. Then said the king unto her, "What wilt thou, Queen Esther? And what is thy request?" "It shall be given thee to the half of the kingdom." And Esther answered, "If it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him." Then the king said, "Cause Haman to make haste, that he may do as Esther hath said." So the king and Haman came to the banquet that Esther had prepared. Verse 1 teaches us that Esther went to the inner court of the king's house. Now, if we did not keep in mind what's already been revealed in the previous chapter, we may not understand just how serious this matter was. You see, by going into the king's court without being invited, she was taking a great risk. Look back at verse 11 of chapter 4. Now, this is Esther and Mordecai communicating through a man named Hatak. "All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days." So if someone made an appearance before the king uninvited, he would be taking his life in his own hands. Now, if the king extended his scepter to this person, everything would be okay. But if the king chose not to, that person would lose his life. And notice that that law related to everybody, man, woman, didn't matter. Didn't matter what province that person was from. If that person came before the king uninvited and the king chose not to extend his scepter, then that person would lose his life. So Esther has decided that she's going to make an appearance before the king. Now, she was communicating with Mordecai. She indicated that she was going to accept the consequences, whatever they were. Look at verse 16 of chapter 4. "Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Esther's taking her life into her own hands by going before the king uninvited. And how long a period of time had passed since she had appeared before the king? 30 days. That's quite a period of time, isn't it? That's a whole month. Well, according to verse 2, when the king saw Esther, he held out his scepter to her. Now, that was an invitation for her to approach the king. Now, that was quite a risk she was taking. But whatever happened, Esther was going to accept the consequences. Fortunately, the king held out his scepter to Esther, and she was allowed to approach. And verse 3, we find the king asking what Esther wanted. That just makes sense. If she's going to approach the king uninvited, then certainly she has something on her mind, some request or something. And so the king asked her what she wanted. And he assured her that he was going to fulfill her request. He said he was actually willing to give Esther half of the kingdom. Well, that's a pretty generous offer, isn't it? But you know, an offer like that may turn out to be a foolish offer. Let's read in the New Testament about an occasion when a similar statement was made and consider the consequences. Let's look at Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6, we will begin at verse 21. Now this is Herod the king, and he's dealing with John the Baptist, who was the Lord's forerunner. Herod was upset with John because John had said that he had no right to the man to whom he was married. He had taken his brother Philip's wife. John pointed out that that was not right. Consequently, John was put in prison. Now, Herodias, Herod's wife, was really upset with John. I start at verse 21. And when a convenient day was come, that Herod on his birthday made a supper to his lords, high captains, and chief estates of Galilee. And when the daughter of the said Herodias came in and danced and pleased Herod and them that sat with him, the king said unto the damsel, Ask of me whatsoever thou wilt, and I will give it thee. And he sware unto her, Whatsoever thou shalt ask of me, I will give it thee unto the half of my kingdom. That's basically the same statement that King Ahasuerus made. Now, this young woman has danced before Herod, and one of my teachers suggested that possibly she danced the dance of the seven veils. And perhaps the seventh veil had come off. I don't know that to be the case. That's just speculation. But her dance pleased Herod well. And she went forth and said unto her mother, What shall I ask? And she said, The head of John the Baptist. And she came in straightway with haste unto the king and asked, saying, I will that thou give me by and by in a charge of the head of John the Baptist. And the king was exceeding sorry, yet for his oath's sake, and for their sakes which sat with him, he would not reject her. And immediately the king sent an executioner, and commanded his head to be brought. And he went and beheaded him in the prison, and brought his head in a charger, and gave it to the damsel, and the damsel gave it to her mother. Notice a very similar statement was made by King Herod. Well, that ended up costing John his life. What a great and a powerful preacher John was. He was sent to prepare the way of the people for the coming of the Lord, and he did his work well. What a miserable end he had. Well, the point that I want to make is that when someone makes a rash vow or a statement like this, the end result may not be good. So Esther approaches King Ahasuerus. Fortunately, he extended his scepter to her. She was allowed to come in, so he naturally asked what she wanted. And he said, I'm going to grant your request unto the half of my kingdom. I think we've already seen that the king is a little bit rash We know he's vain. We know that he's got a lot of pride. But he's a little bit rash, too. Well, look at the request that Esther made in verse 4. She requested that the king and Haman attend a banquet that she had prepared. Now, how did the king feel toward parties? Oh, he just really enjoyed feasting and partying, didn't he? So Esther says, I want you and Haman to attend a banquet that I have prepared for you. Well, I just assume that the king was quite excited to hear that. But we find in verse 5 that the king and Haman went to the banquet. Now remember, Haman has been elevated to a high position by the king. We would consider him to be similar to a prime minister today. So he had a very high position. And apparently the king placed a lot of trust in him. But Esther included Haman in this request. She wanted the king and Haman to come for this banquet that she had prepared. So the king and Haman went. Now let's look at verses 6 through 8. Because at this banquet, the king asked Esther what she wanted. Verse 6. And the king said unto Esther at the banquet of wine, what is thy position? And it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? Even to the half of the kingdom it shall be performed. Then answered Esther and said, my petition and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king hath said. So the king and Haman go to the banquet that Esther has prepared. The king still wants to know what Esther wants, but he assured her that he would grant her request up to the half of the kingdom. And notice that wine is mentioned. And as she responded to the king, Esther said, please come to the banquet tomorrow that I'm going to prepare for you. Well, we know how the king felt toward attending banquets and parties and so forth. And you know, I believe we need to emphasize the providence of God. But I think we also need to emphasize the wisdom of Queen Esther. She was a wise woman. She was very young, but she possessed a great amount of wisdom. But think about what was resting upon her shoulders. The welfare of the whole Jewish people. Well, she bore up under that responsibility very well. Let's notice the reactions of Haman in the verses that follow. Let's continue at verse 9. Then went Haman forth that day joyful and with a glad heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was full of indignation against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself, and when he came home, he sent and called for his friends and Zeresh, his wife. And Haman told them of the glory of his riches and the multitude of his children and all the things wherein the king had promoted him and how he had advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. Haman said moreover, yea, Esther the queen did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she had prepared but myself. And tomorrow am I invited unto her also with the king. Yet all this availeth me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Well, when Haman left this first banquet that Esther had prepared, he was very happy. Think about being invited to a banquet with the king. and that banquet was prepared by the queen. Well, he was very happy. However, when Haman saw Mordecai, he became upset. Now, let's notice something about Mordecai at this point. These verses mention that he was in the king's gate. Something has changed. Remember that after Mordecai learned about this plot that was developed by Haman, he put on sackcloth with ashes. Look at chapter 4 and verse 1 again. When Mordecai perceived all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out to the midst of the city and cried with a loud and a bitter cry. That was Mordecai's response when he learned about this law which said that all the Jews were to be killed. He put on sackcloth with ashes. Now, according to verse 2 of chapter 4, as long as Mordecai was dressed like that, he could not enter into the king's gate. Look at verse 2 again of chapter 4. And came even before the king's gate, for none might enter into the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. So as long as someone was dressed like Mordecai was dressed, he would not be allowed to go inside the king's gate. He'd have to stay outside. But in chapter 5, where is Mordecai? He's sitting in the king's gate. Now, what does that indicate? It indicates to us that he had changed his clothes. Because if someone is sitting in sackcloth with ashes on his head, he would not be allowed to go into the king's gate. But now, he is in the king's gate. That clearly indicates that he had changed his clothes. Now, what allowed him to change his clothes? Or what led him to change his clothes? I think he was quite confident that God was going to take care of the situation. Look again at verse 14 of chapter 4. Now, this is Mordecai responding to Esther. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargements and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Mordecai was confident that God was going to deliver his people. Now, with that confidence, he changed his clothes. He was no longer sitting in sackcloth with ashes. He was now in the king's gate. Well, that's where Mordecai saw him. And according to verses 10, 11, and 12, after Haman went home, he called his wife and he called his friends together, and he told them about all the good things that had happened to him. He had been highly promoted. He had a lot of wealth. He alone had been invited by the queen to go to that banquet with the king. However, in verse 13, Haman said that all those good things that happened to him were useless as long as Mordecai remained at the king's gate. Now that's hatred. And that is what hatred will do to somebody. The Bible teaches us in the New Testament to put away hatred. Well, this is why. Because of what hatred will do. What had Mordecai ever done to Haman to hurt him? He just refused to bow down before him. But Haman developed such hatred in his heart that in spite of all those good things that took place in his life, he couldn't enjoy them because Mordecai was in the king's gate. The Bible not only teaches us to put away hatred, it says, let all bitterness be put away from you. Well, we can look at plenty of examples of people in the Bible who were overcome with bitterness. Haman is a classic example. He was a bitter man, but he had a heart filled with hatred. Isn't that sad? This man had a high position in the Persian government. He had the trust of the king. But yet his hatred for one man ruined everything for him. He couldn't be content with just being grateful for all those good things that took place in his life. He couldn't enjoy them because of his contempt for Mordecai. Well, I believe Haman illustrates to us just how important it is that we follow those instructions given to us in the New Testament that relate to bitterness and hatred. Let's notice the suggestion that was made by Haman's wife and his friends in verse 14. Then said Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends unto him, let a gallows be made of 50 cubits high, and tomorrow speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. Then go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. The timing of this is very interesting. Esther appeared before the king. He extended his scepter. She came in. He just automatically says, what do you want, Esther? But he assured her that he would grant her request. She said, would you come to the banquet that I prepared with Haman? So the king did. And he wants to know what Esther wants. She says, come to the banquet tomorrow that I'm going to prepare and bring Haman with you. A lot took place during that day's time. Well, Haman's wife and his friend suggested that Mordecai be hanged. They told Haman to construct some gallows and take care of the hanging before the banquet. Well, Haman agreed with that, and he had those gallows built. Now, Haman thought that all of his problems would disappear if Mordecai was eliminated. But he made a big mistake, and his mistake was he was going against God's will. Sometimes I think about when Saul was on his way to Damascus and the Lord appeared to him. You see, it was necessary for the Lord to appear to Saul after his resurrection so that Saul, later known as Paul, would be qualified to serve as an apostle. Now, Saul was not saved on the road to Damascus. He had to go into Damascus and be taught by Ananias, where he was baptized. It was at that point that he was saved from his sins. You have to look at three accounts in the book of Acts. Chapters 9, 22, and 26. Saul's conversion is recorded in all three places, and each place gives a little bit more detailed information, so you can see the whole picture. But when the Lord appeared to Saul, he said, Saul, Saul, why persecutest thou me? I don't know if Saul ever saw the Lord in the flesh. But we know what Saul was doing. He was persecuting Christians. And the Lord took that personally. Therefore, the Lord said, why are you persecuting me? Now, Haman's contempt for the people of God was actually toward God himself. And God took it personally. And God worked everything out. Well, Haman thought that all of his problems would go away if Mordecai could just be eliminated. But he was going against the will of God. That was his big mistake. Now think about this for just a moment, because some very interesting circumstances have developed. Let's think about Mordecai. He was a faithful and a dedicated Jew. He was devoted to doing the will of God. But he suffered because of the hatred of Haman. Now that hardly seems fair, does it? It's not fair. Mordecai was a righteous man, but he's suffering because of the contempt of Haman. What about Haman? He had no concern for the will of God. He had no concern for God's people. Matter of fact, he wanted to eliminate them. He was well off, and he seemed to be quite happy. That doesn't seem fair, does it? But that's the story up to this point. Because in chapter 6, things begin to change. God is working all things together for the good of his people. It didn't happen overnight, but God worked on his time schedule. But you know, he had some willing people, Mordecai and Esther. They were faithful to God, and they were willing to be used in his service. Well, some interesting circumstances take place in chapter 6. Well, I appreciate your good attention.